How can we engage the culture, especially in books, music, and movies, with charitable and critical discussion through a lens of faith, and as a means of drawing ourselves and others closer to Jesus? I'm Ali LaVille.
And I'm Andy Norton. This is Though They Die, talking about the things of this world through the lens of eternity. Welcome to the show.
Episode one.
Dude, it's finally happening. This is it. That's so amazing. Bummed.
All right. What are we talking about today?
We are talking about A Quiet Place. So as you know from the intro, like, we talk about movies, books, music. I feel like movies are going to get the predominant.
Yeah, for
like,
sure. Definitely going to be.
We just love movies. Who doesn't like movies?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, but we wanted to start off with A Quiet Place. Mm-hmm. Quiet Place.
Go big.
Which, Ali, you just watched last night.
I just watched
night.
Yesterday.
Yeah.
Yesterday, hours
texted
ago.
Texted me, what did I just see? It was so awesome. My wife was like, what did you text him? Like, and I was like, no, he just watched A Quiet Place. She thought I'd like, sent you a weird video or something. Oh, it's so funny. But yeah, so this is a movie from 2018. Mm-hmm. And so we wanted to talk about this and really pull out some of the themes. Mm-hmm. And just to also, in case you're worried and you've never seen it before, we are going to try and have fewer spoilers up front. Toward the end we'll give a full-on warning of like we're going to talk about probably two or three mm-hmm. key things that mm-hmm. that do happen just near the end that afford a spoiler warning. So should I just share the synopsis on this?
Yeah, that'd be great, and then I can talk characters.
Cool. Okay, so I'm going to pull up a little synopsis for the movie so you can know what we're talking about. And our thought here too is, again, if you've never seen this, hopefully this is enjoyable to you because you can mm-hmm. hear from us like a synopsis. You'll hear about the characters, some of the things that happen, some of the key quotes, and then some of the themes. And we'll try and go deeper and bring it to like, how does this relate to us in our walk of discipleship? So mm-hmm. you should be able to enjoy this if you haven't seen it. If you have seen it, you can kind of be reminded of what happened and enter in the conversation in a deeper way. So the synopsis is, if they hear you, they hunt you. A family must live in silence to avoid mysterious creatures that hunt by sound. Knowing that even the slightest whisper or footstep can bring death, Evelyn and Lee are determined to find a way to protect their children while desperately searching for a way to fight back. Mm. How's that sound?
Yeah, that's good.
Pretty accurate.
That's pretty accurate, yeah. So Evelyn and Lee, of course, are the parents.
Yeah.
Played by Emily Blunt and John Krasinski.
Yeah, let's just say that up front. They blow it out of the water. They do fantastic job,
they do a
right?
really good job. It helps being married.
Yes. Yeah, they are married and they're both amazing actors and they
phenomenal.
Killed it. It's so good.
Really good. Really well done.
Yeah.
And then the children, their children are Reagan, Marcus, and Beau Abbott.
Yes.
Respectively. I'm pretty sure that's the order of age, too. I think Reagan's
Yeah. Reagan, Marcus. So girl, boy, boy. And I don't know the names of any of those actors or actresses, but I know they've been in, or at least a couple of them.
They've featured in other things for sure.
The boy, Marcus, I feel like is in a lot. He's in some sort of fantasy series or movie
Noah
or something.
Noah Jupe.
He's Noah Jupe. Oh, is his name. Joop. That's his name. Is That's Noah the actor's Joop. Name. Yeah.
The Night Manger, Suburbicon. He's in Wonder.
Wonder. Did you say the Night Manger? What?
The Night Manager. Yikes.
The
Night
Manager. Okay.
The Night Manager.
I feel like he's the son.
He's in Ford v Ferrari.
So many. Oh.
Which I haven't seen.
Oh. That's a good movie. We can talk about that some other
day. He's in Honey Boy.
Oh, yes. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Honey Boy opposite Shia LaBeouf. Yeah, for sure. Yeah, so fantastic acting from the kids as well. So like just incredible acting from all them. But mm-hmm. what made this movie, what do you think? Okay, so Ali, again, you just saw this last night.
Just saw it.
And I was like, this should be our first movie that we watch. Because it's beloved. Actually, I looked up the Rotten Tomatoes. It's 96% for critics.
Oh, wow.
83% for audience. So they're in agreement, which does not always happen.
That's true.
And even beyond that, like, I think everyone I know who's seen it loves it. And mm-hmm. and it's been so meaningful for so many people. So mm-hmm. that's why I wanted to talk about it. I was like, I know people will know what we're talking about.
Yep.
And then I thought also that, well, why do you think also that we are talking about it? Or what?
Yeah, I think it's a really, I mean, something we want to do on the show, of course, is to bring out Christocentric themes and just show that there is true good and beautiful things in this world.
Yeah.
And while this world is fading and it, you know, it's, everything's going to be dust at one point, ourselves included, mm-hmm. there are still really, really good things that we can draw from this life. And this movie is just a very, I think it's a really, yeah, it's an easy way to demonstrate a lot of that. Like we won't have to do a lot of digging here to bring up some just really good, true good and beautiful things. And so it's a really good starting place, I think, for that reason.
Totally. Yeah. And there's also not a lot of, like excluding we have to do either. Cause sometimes when you're watching movies,
not a lot of caveats.
Yeah, exactly. There's really, I would say nothing inappropriate in it. I think that's accurate.
Nothing stuck out. I mean, it's for mature audiences in the sense of the, it's a grave material, like source, the source material is grave. There's nothing. Yeah. You wouldn't show it to a 5-year-old. Totally,
It's PG-13 purely for the scariness of it.
Right.
And heaviness of it. Yeah. There's some heavy topics and it's very scary. It's a thriller, is what I would say. Not quite a horror. It's scary, but it's a thriller slash like, I don't know. The thing in my mind that like the movie that I've seen at least that is like closest to it is actually Signs.
Right, which I have not seen, but I do know the plot for.
Yes, yeah. It has that very similar feel of like following a family in a apocalyptic-esque situation with an alien-esque type of threat that seems impossible to stop. And then there's a very similar, I think, final kind of scene where they discover something that helps them, I think. Not to give too many spoilers. Sorry. slow down. But yeah, so it's very similar in that way. And has that sort of, and Signs are kind of like not totally off the grid, but it's a little bit of that feeling.
Yeah.
And that's something that's very, I mean, very interesting straight off the bat, I think, in A Quiet Place. If you're watching it, it's just the fact that they're like off the grid, because it's like,
totally,
you know, in this apocalyptic time, society's totally fallen apart as like probably most people have been killed, I'm assuming.
Right. There's what they, I mean, there's the shot in the opening sequence of the missing persons board, and it's just plastered with people that are missing.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. I guess, it's like, oh, they're all dead.
They're all dead. Yeah, exactly. Now, I guess I'll have questions for you about this. So, how did it hit you? You just have now watched it. How did it hit you? That whole thing, that whole vibe of they are kind of off the grid,
totally
having to fend for themselves, like making this farm work. All of that, because I think that is just a huge part of the experience of watching the movie is seeing them in that. How did it hit you? What were your thoughts?
There was a lot of things where I was thinking to myself, what, how does this work? And I think a lot of those questions were actually answered in just observing the film. Even so much as I think it's hilarious, like when they eat, they don't have plates.
Yeah.
Because plates are loud. Mm-hmm. And if you're loud, you die. So they have leaves. And then I was thinking, I was like, I wonder if they eat the leaves, because if you like snap a leaf, like a thing of lettuce, like that's a crunch. I'm like, maybe that's okay. I guess they avoid crunchy food. You know.
Yeah.
So a lot of that I think was answered. And I thought they did a very good job of justifying the choices they made as far as the lifestyle. I did think it was interesting. I was like, I wonder if they're kind of last man standing, like I Am Legend, if that's this sort of vibe. And right around when I was thinking that, John Krasinski's character Lee is up on top of the, it's not a silo, but some a grain storage or corn storage, lighting the, you know, the fire to let the other people know he's still alive. And as he lights his fire, you kind of see on the horizon a few other fires. I'm like, oh, interesting. Okay, so there are people, but it seems like, you know, you can't really afford to, you know, get together, you know, for a little picnic or anything. So it's just kind of like, are you still kicking?
How did it make you feel though on the level of like, okay, because I'll just say for me, you didn't grow up in the suburbs, did you? Did you grow up in?
I grew up in the burbs. Oh,
the burbs. Okay, me too. So did you have any sense of not inadequacy, but like, could I have do this? Like, if I was in this situation, what would
question,
I do?
I mean, we don't know that that's where they were originally. I think it's probably implied that that's their property and always has been.
So they're on this farm. And it seems like maybe that's the farm that they've been.
Right. Where
on.
They've just been. But I think too, it's, I don't know. It's entirely possible that they are just survivors and they got out there. It's not explained, but I think we can probably reasonably assume that
had some skills, maybe.
Yeah, that they lived there and they've already been doing some, you know, some different, off-grid things when this all broke out. Because the other thing is that I did wonder that would actually make a good case for them already owning the property is how do they fortify things and like get all of these off-grid things going quietly?
Quietly, yeah, exactly.
Yeah, like you can't screw a board in quietly. Like there's no, I mean, I don't know. I guess
very slowly.
You have a hand drill, maybe.
Yeah.
I don't know. That would just be very complicated. So I think it's probably a safer assumption that they already lived there. So as far as like getting those things done, yeah, I was like, wow. I mean, all that aside, I'll bet they weren't planning on delivering a baby.
Yeah.
You know,
which they have to do. Eventually.
Which they have to do. It's a big part of the plot. So yeah, definitely feeling very inadequate. I was like, wow, these guys are like going for it. And then they have to, right? Which it's a necessity. But I thought that, yeah, they did a very good, I mean, me as a simpleton, right? Like, I don't know all of the, you know, I don't know how the human ear works, for example, which is a big part of one of the characters' arcs. And, the story arc actually, it turns out to be. And yeah, I don't know anything about giving birth other than that it involves, you know, three persons essentially.
Yeah. I think what you're getting at then is that they probably had some existing like survival skills.
Totally.
As it came into this scenario. But they had like doubtlessly they had to push way beyond that.
Totally.
And I think that that's an inspiring thing in the movie is seeing the virtue that they espouse, like this virtue there, right? And like
absolutely
in pushing themselves, courage, bravery, resourcefulness, faith, trust, all those things, love, lived out as they're seeking to survive and build this home, and be safe in this land, But they also came into that prepared. So I guess that'd be one like theme that I would, not to jump too fast into like big themes, but I do think that a major takeaway is, you know what? There are situations that will come that will push you beyond anything that you can be prepared for.
Oh yeah.
That being said, could you be a little bit more prepared than you are? Maybe like, should
totally.
You be?
Yeah.
And so I think we could maybe, you know, talk about that more later, but I just think that like we need to think, there's a quote I heard from St. Jose Maria Escriva. I think he talked about when things are not like hard, prepare for the times that will be.
Big facts.
So like when in your faith too, like if you're having a time of consolation, things are easier right now. Like, don't just ride on that. Like, prepare.
Get ready, bro.
Like, get ready. Like, because there will be different times that will test you and push you. And so how can we be ready? So that was a big thing that I know I was inspired by. I was like, I don't need to be a prepper. I don't need to, know how to do everything and be self-sufficient to an absurd and, like, unhealthy degree.
Right. I mean, because then you just get into the, you fool, why are you storing up for, tomorrow? 4, today your life will be demanded of you kind of thing. Right. So there's virtue. You have to find the virtuous middle ground. I think just jumping on that really quick, again, not to get too much into themes, is the way the movie, they always struggle. There's a very clear distinction that gets made within the plot of what it means to give up in a particular instance, and then what it means to deal with and go forward. Because think about it, they can't really like have a little tantrum, because if you have a little tantrum, you die. You can kind of, you can process things, but you got to process them quietly. And you really can't afford to be dumb. Like you have to really move your emotions through a place of reason. Like you're forced to go the natural way of processing in the circumstances that the characters are put into, which is really interesting for preparing and being a survivor and really accepting the challenge. So
wow, that's so
interesting.
I love that.
Oh, absolutely. So to get into the kind of the, I don't know, to
the facts of the story.
Yeah, the things that will then lead us to bringing out some things. I think there's, so I've got three things. And it's very central around the mother and the father, Evelyn and Lee, respectively. And then also a bit about their youngest son, Beau, and how that influences the rest of the plot. So those are my bits. What you got, Norton?
Yeah. Gosh. Well, I would love to hear your things and then maybe just go from there. Yeah.
Great. Okay. Big spoiler. Not really, because it happens in the first five minutes, but just, in case you really want to know the first 5 minutes, you should stop listening right now. Beau, the youngest son, who's four, when we meet him at the beginning, dies, like, pretty immediately as far as time length is concerned in the movie, in the film. He, for those of you know, of course, he has this spaceship. It makes a lot of noise. Dad confiscates it. Sister then gives the spaceship without batteries. He takes batteries, and on their walk home, he puts the batteries in. Spaceship lights up. Monster hears. Boom. Beau is gone.
Yeah.
And so for the characters, for the rest of the plot, they are grappling with the death of their brother, their son, and, you know, what they could have done, right? She could have not given him the plane. Dad could have ran faster. Mom could have held him on the walk.
Yeah.
A lot of different things happening. I think it is so interesting how he, in a sense, right, is not fully aware of his surroundings. He's four. How can he be? Which is why he's so, like, naive to, you know, get himself killed. But also, like, I think it's a sign. I think in one way, and this is just a quick, I just needed to mention it because it really builds into the my next two things. But I think it highlights children being brought into the world, right? And they're not innocent, but after baptism, right, they are. They're in that state of grace. They've got the stain of original sin. That's what I mean when I say they're not innocent. But they are, there is innocence to them, right?
Yes,
they're not yet at the age of reason.
Yeah.
So just to qualify that, but, he is innocent, right? In his death. And he, you know, he should be able to, you know, play with this toy kind of thing. And if you look at, like, kids these days, our kids, it's like, they should be able to enter into this world and, you know, go to the playground and just exist and be, but there's a lot of evil in the world that prevents them from doing that. And so I think it's just it's a really clear, I think, message anyway, about how the world absolutely is just against us right from the get go. And this just, like, super obvious, right? Like, death of innocence, that sets up the rest of the film. And I think, kind of going to the struggle a bit, it's amazing that the family doesn't collapse there.
Yes.
Right. That they keep on going, and they're like, yeah, that might be true. This world is evil, but that's not a reason to, therefore just, like, give up the fight. So
yes,
going into the mother, there's a shot that is, it's probably, I would say it's the artsiest shot, and it's just very striking. And it's, Evelyn standing there with Reagan heading down one path, and then Lee and Marcus heading down another path, but it's all in the same shot. So you've got Evelyn off to the right hand of the screen, and then Reagan kind of heading, I guess, into the background, and Lee and Marcus heading off to the left of the screen. And I thought that's pretty indicative of kind of how a lot of their character arcs work, because everything has to go from the mother, right? Physically, the children came from the mother. They go out from her. And similarly, I think the husband goes forth from the mother, because he has to leave her to work, right? So provide, protect, procreate, if we're just looking at the three things that are, you know, pretty basic in fatherhood. He has to go forth from the mother and then return to her each and every day. And so I think that's like just a little point. And then I think another point is living because of the father. And I won't talk too much about that just yet, because we're still kind of mid-podcasty here. But yeah, those are my three. Those are my three big things. And I think there's a lot in there to discuss. And then also, of course, some, but I won't get into all that. Just
no, so. I think that's great. And I think a good thing maybe to note here is that, if you have watched it, or if you go to watch it, like, it's easy for, like, for Beau's death at the beginning to just be, it's so shocking, and so striking and unsettling. And it's one of the things I think people remember more than anything
probably
after the movie,
yeah.
Which is good and fine, but I think it's good to remember that that's actually, it's so striking because it almost all the other themes revolve around it too. Mm-hmm. And so not to just let it be shocking to be shocking, but also right. because like,
it has a point.
Yeah, exactly. It has a point. And I think you're right. That it's all like a couple of the scenes that are most striking to me are when they're, when husband and wife are sitting together for a rare moment of being able to just talk and a rare moment where they actually open up about that grief.
Right. Yeah.
And I think she starts maybe second guessing, like I could have held him. Like, yeah, he was heavy, but like, I could have done that. Mm-hmm. And he's like, no, like, don't do this to yourself. Don't do this. And then she goes on to say, this like key line of like, who are we if we can't right. protect them?
I love, I'm going to let you keep going, but I just want to point out as well, like, I think that's the one shot where I couldn't tell if she was looking at me or looking at him, because the camera's angled to where, like, it looks like almost she's looking into the camera.
Yeah.
For the way I was watching it, and that's the only time that happens in the movie. And I was just like, Emily, what? Emily, what are you saying?
Yeah, exactly. Like, taking that on yourself. Absolutely. Yeah. And especially because she gives that like injunction too of mm-hmm. you know, who are we? You have to protect them.
Yeah.
Promise me you will protect them. So such a powerful scene. I love that he's tender to her and is saying like, don't do this to yourself. But at the same time, she does have to process these things. Like maybe she's being overly hard on herself.
Literally can't speak them. So
yeah, exactly. Exactly. So for her to be able to process that is important. And she's getting to that very key thing of, we do have to protect them. Like, that is so key. And so that theme of protection, is really interesting. Also, especially because if you look back at that scene, I like that they weren't coddling him. Like, yeah, he's 4.
Yeah.
But he does not need to be carried. You cannot survive if you keep carrying him everywhere.
Right. He's not going to know how to walk.
He's not going to know how to walk. He's not going to ever learn. And so there's I think a big theme in the movie is then the discerning, what does it mean to protect them? As a father myself, I'm thinking about that all the time of like, how to protect my children, but also let them walk. How do I allow them to walk? And a lot of times I am trying to almost push that line a little bit and like, let them walk behind me, you know, mm-hmm. physically. I mean, we walk actually for 45 minutes almost every night, my family.
Mom.
And so a lot of times they're walking in front of me or behind me. And, you know, if my 4-year-old, same age as Bo, is out running ahead of me, I'm trying to toe that line of like, how do I make sure that he's protected? He's not going to run out in front of a car and cross the street.
Right.
At the same time that he feels trusted and that he is learning how to be trustworthy and go on his own. So that's just a really deep and amazing piece of the movie. And then later too, I think she is talking to the mother is talking to the older boy, Marcus,
mm-hmm.
as Marcus is, I think, scared to go on this like expedition with his father.
Start learning the ways.
And she says to him, you know, your father will always protect you.
Yeah.
Your father will always protect you. Always. And so it's just beautiful. And then that expedition, I think, is a huge key part of the movie too, mm-hmm. where Marcus has some time alone with his dad. And there's a point where they're able to actually talk to each other for one of the first times maybe in their life, I think, or at least since before the happening,
mm-hmm.
Where they are, there's a waterfall, right? And it masks the sound. And so they're able to speak to each other. But Marcus has this conversation where he asks him, I think a little bit later, he asks, do you blame the girl, the older sister who gave him back the rocket ship?
Right.
Do you blame her for what happened? And he says, no. And he says, because she blames herself.
Right.
And he says, it was no one's fault. And he says, you still love her, right? Like, he's still asking. And he's like, of course I do, the dad. And so the Marcus says, you should tell her. And I think that's a huge theme too,
mm-hmm.
is like this, the older girl is bearing so much guilt, and the dad's like, of course I don't blame her, you know, like, of course I love her, but he hasn't expressed it. And it's a mm-hmm. bit of, I mean, I would say, do you think it's a bit of a failing on his part, more or less? What do you think?
I think he is probably one of the most in recent memory, humble men on screen, because he takes it all,
yes,
and bears it as best he can without ever complaining.
Yeah.
Like when his son says, you should tell her that, again, he's not like, how dare you?
Or yeah,
like,
no, no,
it's
no.
Not your, know your place. No, he's like, okay. And yeah, he just takes it and moves. You know, you mentioned when his wife is saying, promise me you'll protect them. It's just, okay. He takes it and moves.
Yeah.
So I think, yeah. So to notice a very, very Josephite quality in him, is just receiving and then acting.
Yes.
But I think, yeah, I mean, I think that is a failing. And I think to it, in his brokenness, he probably is attempting to, by fixing her, earpiece. I don't know what that's called. Important note, Reagan, the eldest daughter is deaf, but has a
hearing aid. Hearing
is it cochlear?
Oh yeah.
Cochlear implant.
Yeah,
something
I think so.
I think so. Oh, heaven forgive sounds me, right deaf to me. Community, forgive yeah. me.
No, absolutely.
Cochlear implant community, forgive me. But she's got one of these things, right? You might have seen someone with them. It's basically a little piece on the back of the ear, and then it's like they've got something drilled, kind of just in the off right of their cranium.
Yeah,
I guess. And he's trying to fix this for her so that she can hear, because obviously a big way to survive is being able to hear. So, you know, if you're making a noise.
Yeah.
And this for him, right, is a huge, the father that is a big, like, I need to protect her because she literally can't freaking hear. Like, how is she supposed to survive if she, you know,
yeah,
she can't even hear a monster behind her,
yeah,
which
that does
happens.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I think in his brokenness, he attempts to without explicitly doing so.
Yes.
So interesting how this show is about talking about things. How often do we just assume, you know, an intention behind something without explicitly stating the intention behind something?
Well,
I do think that's a failing.
A failing and maybe not necessarily a culpable failing per
right,
se.
But he didn't know.
Yeah. I just think, Not to get too self-referential, but I just feel like, I know for me, I definitely have experienced that in my life. Like, there's been people who I needed to hear certain things from. Who,
totally.
Like, haven't always heard the things that I wish I heard. And in reality, mm-hmm, if I really think about it, I'm like, you know, for example, like, you know, this person loves me, but they're not, like, do they say it? Do they express it?
Right.
In the ways that need to happen. And so with that, I think, you know, I know, again, as a man, as a father, like, I am looking for ways I can do that for my children. And this movie helped me remember that too. Mm. Like, I need to express that to my kids, that, like, it's not your fault. Mm. I forgive you. I love you. Like, don't like, help them to not carry those things when a word from me would change that.
Totally.
But that being said too, I know as I've grown up, I've realized you can't get through life without people who should have said things to you not saying them.
Yeah.
And I think the solution there is not for everyone to be perfect, and for you to blame those people and be like, yeah, see, like, you should have said,
right,
you should have told me you were proud of me, but rather look to the perfect father. Cause, like, our imperfect fathers, our imperfect, you know, family members who should have maybe said some things to us, I'm sorry, they're imperfect. They're always going to be imperfect. Mm-hmm. And I wish they were better. And sometimes they're really not good at all, but with, like, it should point us to the father, and, you know, and we need to come back to him when we're feeling like that lack of affirmation or whatever it is that we need to hear a word, come back to the father who says, to Jesus, and he says to us through Jesus, you know, this is my beloved son with whom I am well pleased, and, like, rest in that identity. So that's kind of where I
totally
wrestle with that.
Yeah. I think to get into the, we're going to get into the big old spoilers now, to start segueing here. Yeah, Andy, I mean, that is a fantastic point, because the reality is, especially, I mean, just to speak on fatherhood as men, whatever fatherhood we're called to, we're going to fail at.
Yes.
I think it's really, I mean, yeah, we just are. There's no two ways around it. We're not going to be perfect. And so I think the way that the character Lee takes in all of his failings, right? So failure to protect his youngest son, failure to fix his eldest daughter's earpiece, failure to, you know, be there when his wife most needs him.
Yeah.
Immediately, whether that's, you know, not his fault really. and some other stuff. He just takes all of it in and moves forward as best as he sees fit, which, big spoiler, leads to his death and his self-sacrifice,
right,
which is directly contrasted with like the only other person in the cast, Man in the Woods, as he's labeled as, in the credits, is, does the exact opposite. So while Marcus and Lee are out, kind of in Lee's teaching Marcus the ropes, there is a man standing next to his cut in half wife, we assume.
Yeah.
And he is done. He is over the running, the hiding, the quietness, all this stuff. And it's understood that he's about to scream with Lee and Marcus present there, meaning that something's going to come and kill him.
Right.
And Lee, ever the sign of, you know, enduring, is like, no, like, be quiet, man. You don't have to do this. And the guy's like, no, I do.
It's such a powerfully shot scene.
Oh my gosh.
When Lee puts his like finger to his mouth to shush. Like, if you know, it's just interesting. Like, you watch it, like,
He like
hits his nose.
Yeah.
It's just so visceral. Such a well shot scene.
Yep.
That you feel the tension like so strong.
Yeah. Yeah. And so ultimately the man screams and Lee and Marcus run for cover and the man dies, of course. So fast forward now to the climax of the, well, that's not the, I guess it isn't the climax. It's
the penultimate climax.
Yeah.
It's part of the climax.
It's part of the climax for sure. It makes you feel like it's the climax.
Yeah,
I'll put it that way.
Fair, yeah.
In the moment you're like, oh, this is the climax of the film. Lee offers his life so that his children will live.
Lee does, or did you call him Ellie?
Did I say Lee?
You almost put your own name in there.
Oh my God. It's hard. It's very similar.
Just relate to him so deeply.
I just want to be him. I do. He's a really great guy. Lee, sacrifices himself in order to save his kids. And living, so my point was living because of the father. And he is imperfect, right?
Yeah.
Which we noted, we're imperfect. But he can still live well. So even in spite of his imperfections, he lives a redemptive, good life.
Yes.
And I would say does it right. I mean, so here he is. He's got this axe and, you know, he's like, where is this thing? The thing's above him. And he takes a swing at the thing and the thing is not fazed by an axe at all, which is important to note because then it goes after his kids that are in this truck and we think he's dead. He gets back up. He's mortally wounded. We can assume, and he's still got the axe. And my thought was kind of like, oh man, like go Rambo on this thing, man. Like hacking away at it. But then you realize, oh wait, the axe doesn't do anything.
Totally.
So it wouldn't even matter if he tried to swing at it kind of thing. And so of course, before he sacrifices himself in order that his kids can kind of escape in this truck that is conveniently placed on a hill so that when you release the handbrake, it rolls away, which I'm sure was intentional. I'm just assuming that that's part of like prepping for them, like have a vehicle on a hill that can roll away in need.
Because that way it doesn't have to turn on.
Exactly. And so I think it's safe to assume that's part of their prepping, which they conveniently show in a previous shot of the boy playing in the vehicle and pretending to release the handbrake. I was like, oh yes, get us ready for that moment. But he says to his daughter, he's like, I love you. I have always loved you before he screams. And she's of course, you know, in tatters because of that. But going from the mother, right? All of them have to go from the mother, whether that's physically at their birth or the husband metaphorically. So the husband goes from the mother, from the wife. And then life is because of the husband, right? Because of the father. Yeah. And so in a very real way, as we like look at the spiritual ramifications here, right? We have to go from the mother. She's the one that's going to be like, from our mother Mary, we can even say, who's going to be like, yeah, you need to go to your dad about this kind of thing. And the mother does that in the movie, Evelyn pointing Marcus, like Marcus being like, hey, I don't really want to do this. And she's like, you're going to be okay. Like he's got you.
Yeah.
And you'll notice Evelyn doesn't get the opportunity to say that to Reagan.
Mm.
And Reagan, because of her angst, you know, runs away and then has to experience this in a much... much more sullen circumstance.
Yeah.
But I'm on semantics right now, but living because of the father is we have life because of the Father, our perfect Father, of course. But we also have it because of our imperfect Father.
So true.
And so as these characters deal with their broken circumstances, their messed up world, we have to do the same, right? With our imperfect Father, with our imperfect mother, whether they're present or not in our lives, like we have life because of them. And there's a certain difficult reality in that. And as much as these characters, difficult reality as well. Like, think about Reagan. I mean, she can't go to a friend and process this or anything. She can go to her dead brother's grave and process it. But that's all she's got. And in the same way, like, what we've got is what we've got. And we have to make the best of it. And not in like a settle for less kind of way, but in a truly like the Lord is going to make a beautiful thing from what there's not going to be any wasted canvas by the time this is all over, provided we let him work in our lives.
Beautiful.
So I think it's hilarious. I wrote authentic love requires sacrifice regardless of relationship is like my big takeaway.
Yeah.
Because if you look at it, every single relationship in that film expresses genuine sacrifice. Evelyn has to sacrifice her foot for the sake of love. And, you know, a comfy birth sequence for the sake of love. Lee has to sacrifice himself for the sake of love. Reagan has to sacrifice the potentiality of her hearing for the sake of love. Marcus, I would argue, sacrifices being wrong when he's sticking up for his dad. So he's potentially like really just messing up here, sticking up for his dad and is willing to hold the child that is loud in the final sequence, right? He's like, yeah, I'm going to hold this baby and that might mean I die with it, but because this baby doesn't know how to shut up, it's a baby for the sake of love. And I think that's my big takeaway.
Such a great
love equals sacrifice.
Love equals sacrifice. Absolutely. And maybe a quick note on that too. I love that. Like I love when they're able to nail like someone sacrificing themselves in a way that is, let me just back that up.
Totally.
Absolutely. Love requires sacrifice. Like that is so key. I love it. One more big spoiler piece I would say would be in the actual climactic scene, right? Where they're,
oh my gosh,
with the, creature, the monster, the alien.
Crazy thing. And
it turns out they discover that it was actually in the hearing aid implant, that the key to their success actually was because actually these creatures hunt by sound. And it turns out that like when the hearing aid is like, you know, screeching or whatever, it's like totally rendering them helpless or even killing them, I think. Mm-hmm. And then of course, Emily Blunt has to blow it away with a shotgun, which is super intense.
Which is interesting because they say they're invincible. And I was kind of like, wait, then how'd she kill it with a shotgun? And it's because whatever high frequency messes with their hearing,
opens them up to being
more vulnerable from a round of buckshot.
Totally. But I think it's a cool, like kind of just, you know, full circle wrap up to that story. But also I think that there's an interesting theme of sort of that you kind of expressing what you were just saying too, about how they're all, how we're imperfect. And we have to work with that.
Mm-hmm.
Is that there's a saying of like the obstacle is the way, right?
Mm.
And that, you know, the key is like how we see obstacles, how we react to them, whether we keep our composure when we face an obstacle and the obstacle in the path becomes a path. That's just an approach to obstacles.
Mm-hmm.
I think that this movie really showcases that too, where it's like, you know, for nearly all of the characters, a weakness or an obstacle to them becomes maybe the way in which they, you know, achieve what they need to do. Mm-hmm. Most clearly with Reagan, with the hearing aid. But but even like you said, like we're imperfect, we're broken. Some things can feel like that's holding me back or that's an obstacle. But actually, I think we can find in those sometimes the solution and working through them is the way that we work out our salvation, right? It's the thing that we have to work on. And so, I don't know, with that, like to confidently take what we're struggling with and not wish those away, but rather be like, how do I approach this in a way where I see how am I called to be sanctified and called to glorify God yeah. through my wrestling with this obstacle.
Yeah.
So if you've got issues,
come on, get on the bandwagon. Yeah.
Get on the bandwagon.
We got, I think to kind of like add another facet to that, it's really interesting. Stephen Colbert is quoted saying, "What punishments of God's are not gifts," which is related to his love for Tolkien, J.R.R. Tolkien.
Yeah.
And I think, right, she sees this implant as a curse. Like, my dad can't even do this right. When in reality, the gift he gives is far better than fixing her hearing, right? Yeah. He's found a solution, albeit unwittingly, yeah. To this creature, this big problem. And so I think similarly, what we perceive as a punishment from God is often probably a better gift than what we ever could have asked for, right? It might not be what we wanted, but it's what we need deeply and profoundly. And so I think like, yeah, if you're struggling with circumstance or whatever, you might have the solution. You don't even know it
yet. I would say you have what it takes. Like you
Amen.
Do.
Yeah, like let's go a step. Absolutely.
I think it is... on some level it is in you and it's in, or at least it's in, what God has for you. Mm-hmm. And if you go to him and go to his grace, like you have it in you to face these things. And those exact obstacles will be the way in which you actually come to the Father.
Totally.
So I think that would be my closing message. And with that too, like, I think we are all called to this. Doesn't matter that I'm a father of a 4-year-old, but like, we're all called to be for others, self-sacrificial, loving, and call others on in that way of like, you can do this. And 'cause again, we talked about like, there's a perfect father. We all have imperfect fathers, imperfect people in our lives. But a calling that I think we all have and that we can join in today, that you can start
right
joining
now.
In today,
right now.
Is actually going to the Father and having him say to you, hearing him say to you, "You are my beloved son with whom mm-hmm. I'm well pleased," and sharing that with people, like speaking to people's lives. I think that is a calling that we need to step up to, is that we actually have, we need to be the people who let people know. Like Marcus says, like, you should tell her, you know, like, you should tell her that you don't hold it against her and that she mm-hmm. is good. She is loved. Like, mm-hmm. we need to do that for people around us. Mm-hmm. People are counting on us to do that. And so go to the Father to hear it from him.
Amen.
And bring that to others.
Amen. Yeah. Woo.
Boom.
There we go.
Yeah.
Episode 1. Thank you to our patron sponsors that don't exist.
Yes.
We love you guys. We don't have any supporters.
We don't.
We're just out here doing this thing.
Absolutely.
What else do people usually like join? That's pretty much
that's
it.
Pretty
usually
much
they're
it.
Like
join
Patreon.
Patreon. Yeah, which we do not have.
Which we don't have. So don't do it because it doesn't exist.
Exactly. Instead, we are sponsored by Net Ministries. Mm-hmm. Though They Die is sponsored by Net Ministries, and there's a way for them to get in touch with us.
There though, super like, is. Yeah.
So it's, which is what?
You want me to say it? Yeah. So it's thoughtheydie@netusa.org. Little email address there for you.
Unless though spelled out T-H-O-U-G-H, not T-H-O.
Oh, gross.
In case you were wondering.
Sorry. Yeah, we like spelling things here. I know we sound really trendy, but turns out we like spelling things.
Absolutely. Yeah.
It's going to lose so many people right there. They're like, great, I'm done. Never listening to another episode. Gross. No.
Well, wonderful. Well, we hope you enjoyed listening to today's episode. Mm-hmm. And to get involved as the Net Missionary, you can also go to netusa.org/apply and apply today.
Do it.